Welcome, everyone, to Bring Out the Talent. My name is Maria Melfa, and I am the CEO and president of the Training Associates, otherwise known as TTA.
And I'm Jocelyn Allen, a talent recruitment manager here at TTA, and we're so excited to have you back with us.
We are very excited today to have Dr. Christopher Croner join us. Dr. Croner is the founder of Sales Drive, a firm that specializes in the selection and deployment of high-performing salespeople. As a training company, we work with companies of all sizes on their sales training and onboarding programs. With sales positions having such a high turnover rate, many organizations are looking for the secret to hiring and keeping exceptional salespeople. Today, we will uncover the secret formula for success, and here's a hint. It's all about the assessment. Many companies fail to use sales assessments and hire based on interviews. And as we know, salespeople can be so good at interviewing. This hiring process contributes to the high turnover rate for sales roles. To help, we thought it would be important to address this topic in more detail with none other than sales assessment expert, Dr. Croner. Dr. Croner is a co-author of the book, Never Hire a Bad Salesperson Again, detailing his research and practice in identifying the non-teachable personality traits common to top producers. Dr. Croner developed a proprietary DRIVE test diagnostic system, including the DRIVE interview for salesperson selection. Using the system, he has helped over 1,200 companies worldwide to hire and develop top-performing salespeople. Dr. Croner has served as an adjunct faculty member at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, teaching personnel selection in the Industrial Psychology Masters of Arts program. Dr. Croner is a member of the consulting section of the Illinois Psychological Association and former co-program chair of the Chicago Industrial Organizational Psychologist. Dr. Croner received a BA in psychology from DePaul University and his master's and PhD in clinical psychology from the Southern Illinois University of Carbondale. Wow. Welcome, Dr. Croner.
Maria and Jocelyn, it is a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me, and I very much look forward to being of service to you and your audience today.
We're really excited. These kinds of things are what get Maria and I really amped up, because there are so many different directions and avenues that you can use this information for. So we're just as thrilled to have you with us today, Dr. Croner. So thank you. We cannot thank you enough for spending time with us.
My pleasure.
You have helped over 1,200 companies worldwide to hire and develop top-performing salespeople with your firm, Sales Drive. Tell us about the origin of Sales Drive and what led you to get into this business of sales assessments.
Very good question. I got started again back in, 2002. I was working at a firm called Whitmer & Associates in the Chicago suburb of Oak Brook. Whitmer & Associates specialized in executive assessment. So companies, sometimes when they're going to hire a new president or new VP, they will bring in a psychologist to sit down with that person, do maybe a two-hour interview, as well as a job simulation exercise, maybe some intellectual testing to kind of determine how successful the person will be in that role. Well, of course, because sales is really the lifeblood of any company, you don't need to assess anything else if you're not selling anything. They wanted to design something as rigorous as that, only for salespeople. So they brought me on board to do that back in 2002. And that's when I began to do the research that led to eventually our book, Never Hire a Bad Salesperson Again. My specialty was identifying, interviewing candidates, identifying those who would be successful as salespeople. And in doing so, started really looking at everything that had been published academically in terms of that topic of what is it that makes a successful salesperson, as well as kind of combining that with the work that I was doing, circling back with managers after those interviews, finding out who really does become successful over time, and then developing a model, if you will, of interviewing and assessing candidates for those characteristics. And that's when I met my co-author on Never Hire a Bad Salesperson Again, Richard Abraham. Mr. Abraham is author of the book, Mr. Schmooze, The Art and Science of Selling Through Relationships. And he had been speaking across the country on this best-selling book about developing salespeople. And he would frequently get the question, well, what about our team? Can you make them like this character in your book, this top-performing salesperson, Mr. Schmooze? And he would meet with that group. And he, in those discussions, he would conclude in meeting with the manager thereafter, well, you know, you've got a large team here. Many of them just aren't going to make it. They just don't have the potential. And the company would often get very upset, thinking, wait a minute, you know, I hired that person. That's my brother-in-law. Can you back this up with data? And that's when he began to look around for something that he could use to quantify, you know, what is it that leads to success as a salesperson. And that's when he found me and the work that I was doing and asked me, you know, is there something out there that measures success, you know, measures these characteristics that you're identifying as being important? And there really wasn't. And that's when we began collaborating. We created SalesDrive, or founded SalesDrive formally in 2005. And we began, gosh, at that point, from then to now, as you mentioned, we've worked with over 1,200 companies around the world, helping them identify those high potential candidates. We wrote Never Hire a Bad Salesperson Again in 2006, the second edition of which will be coming out in December of this year, 1 month from now. So we're obviously very proud of that. It's very rewarding. It's very gratifying to work with companies, again, frequently who will come to us with a lot of frustration, as you can imagine, thinking that there's no consistent way of finding high performance salespeople. They think it's a crapshoot, or they think that, you know, they kind of have this model of kind of churn and burn. And that's really not necessary. You know, there's a consistent process that you can use. And I enjoy teaching, and I enjoy the opportunity to share our assessment with our clients to help them, you know, develop a consistent process of identifying those candidates with those non-teachable characteristics essential for success. So yeah, this topic is all I have eat, breathed, and slept since October of 2002. So it's been a fantastic journey. I've truly enjoyed it.
How long did it take you to develop the assessment from start to finish?
You know, the most recent version of the assessment took about 6 months in total for the development. It was a matter of coming up with the questions for the assessment. And we had a team of psychologists work to collaborate on making sure the questions were going to be effective in terms of reducing faking. As you can imagine, that can be a big problem with assessments. And then it's a matter of putting it through the paces, if you will, on the development side, using a process called validation. You always want to make sure that the test is measuring what you say it's going to measure. So you take time. We worked with several companies looking at several hundred salespeople, looking at their scores on the assessment and comparing that to manager ratings of the characteristics that we're assessing, as well as their sales performance. Is it predicting their performance? And when we found those strong correlations, we were confident that we had something. Of course, that's effective and predictive of success. That process was about 6 months from start to finish, but we're always perfecting, even for any company that we work with. You know, we want to make sure that we identify with them up front, keeping in mind that the proof is in the pudding. Let's test, you know, one or two of your high performing salespeople and see how they match to the assessment. We're very confident. We always get strong feedback that the assessment is consistently predicting people who are strong, you know, in terms of sales success, because we look for those non-teachable traits.
So to me, 6 months seems like a very vast amount of time to develop something like this, but I guess that's not necessarily start to finish. So how long did it take start to finish for you to develop this assessment and realize that it was giving you the results that you were looking for?
The first version of the assessment, we actually had an established assessment we were using online, to which we applied our own proprietary algorithms. We had been using that for, over 10 years. Testing tens of thousands of people with that model. And that reassured us that, again, the characteristics that we're assessing were going to be effective. You know, we're going after the right things. And then we use that to, of course, design our own proprietary version, our most recent version of it. But it takes about that much time. As you can imagine, if you have a team kind of writing the questions, doing the validation, you get everybody ready to take the assessment, all of the current salespeople take the assessment, then you look at the ratings of performance. So it's a very coordinated effort, as you can imagine. But through not only the experience of doing the research, yes, over a decade, and then combining that with knowledge of, you know, constructing an assessment, how to do that effectively, and then taking the time to assess a group of salespeople, comparing that to their performance, you can do that last part relatively efficiently. But of course, for the foundation of the house, yeah, that took well over a decade of kind of experience and research in terms of developing the model, doing the background research, using our initial version of the assessment, and then perfecting that or getting that ready to the next level with our current version, if you will.
So, Dr. Croner, you mentioned that a lot of the validity of the sales assessments has come from interviewing a lot of companies that have had high-performing salespeople. Is that where you get all the data from?
Really, it was a matter of asking several hundred salespeople to complete the assessment, and then going to their managers and getting ratings of their competencies in terms of how the manager would score them on those characteristics, as well as the manager rating of the person's sales performance, their financial performance, if you will. And then it's looking at the correlation between scores on the assessment and the salesperson's performance and making sure that those correlations are strong. That's really the validation process. And then, of course, making sure that the assessment is reliable, et cetera. So that's that process that goes into constructing any assessment. And of course, We also have case studies on our website in terms of companies who have used the assessment in the past. But for any given company, you can all, you know, case studies are fine. You know, the validation is important, but the proof is always in the pudding, as I mentioned. So we always invite any company to reach out to us to request a complimentary assessment of one of their salespeople and look for themselves at how the relationship between the score on the assessment and the salesperson's performance is strong in terms of that the connection between the two. Because again, we're going after those non-teachable characteristics essential for hunters.
The average sales turnover is 35%, higher than the average for all other roles at 13%. Why do you think that is? And what are hiring managers missing in their hiring process of a salesperson?
Very good question. You know, in terms of the turnover on the sales side, quite frankly, much of it is down to companies' perception that sales is sort of a churn and burn type of a position, or they don't understand the characteristics that they're looking for. If you ask anyone what leads to someone being successful on the sales side, they're going to think of things like, well, the person needs to have the gift of gab, some people might say, or the person needs to be persuasive, or they need to like people. So oftentimes when someone is interviewing a sales candidate, they're looking for those things. They want to see whether or not the person, again, comes across as a positive individual and whether or not they really kind of get a good gut feel or whether the person's going to be successful in that role. But that doesn't tell you anything about whether they really have those non-teachable characteristics that are essential. You can teach someone persuasiveness. You can teach them relationship skills. But if you're only looking for those sorts of things in the interview, and beyond that, if you're only doing that in such a way that you're just asking the person to have a conversation with you and trying to make a conclusion just based upon that conversation, you're going to be in trouble down the road, particularly if you want the person to be a successful hunter. So sometimes they don't put in the time or to necessarily vet that person effectively. Then that person comes on board, they may have a model of, well, sales is a crapshoot. You never know what you're going to get. So when that person comes on board, they may not perform well. The company goes out, they engage in the same process hiring. Of course, you continue to do the same things the same way on the hiring side, you're going to get the same result. And that's what continues happening. So unfortunately, it's kind of baked in the model for several companies, many, many companies, that that hiring process really just is a crapshoot. They don't necessarily know exactly what to look for. And therefore, sales becomes that high turnover position. If you think about it, no other job requires in many, many ways the psychological rigor that a sales job does. So you really do need to invest the time up front to find somebody who has those three non-teachable characteristics essential for success as a hunter salesperson. And then, of course, you have to make sure that you're onboarding them effectively, that you're not just throwing them to the wolves. The temptation, of course, when you hire someone who's high in those three characteristics can be, okay, great, the person has strong drive. Now let's throw them out there. Let's throw them to the wolves and see how they do. They have a high drive. What else do we need to do? Well, there's much more that we need to do, of course, because we need to onboard the person effectively. And there are many best practices there as well. But when we hire someone effectively, we onboard them effectively, and then we manage them effectively. Those things together lead to that lack of attrition that the best companies experience when they don't necessarily have people who are churning, when they keep people on board and they're retaining them. It's, again, designing the process such that we're hiring the right person and then we're giving them the training and development necessary. No different than a great sports team would do with the highest performing athletes, if you will.
So let's talk about your assessment. What are the three elements of drive?
Again, as I mentioned, in terms of developing those, you know, over a decade of research really went into that, you know, again, starting out looking at our own work, as I mentioned, doing behavioral interviews with sales candidates, circling back with their managers thereafter to find out who really does become successful. And then at the same time, looking at everything that had been published on that topic academically over the last 85, almost 90 years now, in terms of what is it that leads someone to be successful as a salesperson. Of course, when we combined all of that data, we found that, again, many of the characteristics, of course, that most people would consider to be essential for success as a salesperson were very important. Again, the expected ones, things like, of course, persuasiveness and relationship skills, even organizational skills as well. But again, above and beyond any of those by far were these three non-teachable characteristics that continued to, again, lead to success as a hunter salesperson. The first one is what we call the need for achievement. And when we talk about the need for achievement in a salesperson, Maria and Jocelyn, we're talking about the person who wants to do well simply for the sake of doing well. So the salesperson who's high in need for achievement, they just naturally want to set the bar high, if you will. They want to jump over that. Then they want to set it even higher again the next time. So they're constantly focused on producing excellence just for the sake of excellence. And it's interesting because the research shows that characteristic need for achievement is important not only for salespeople, but also incidentally for entrepreneurs. People have to kind of get up every morning and make it happen, and there's nobody standing over them watching them. So, of course, as you can imagine, as companies are now having to hire in many cases a bit more remotely, we're finding that characteristic just continues to become more and more important. So that's the first piece, need for achievement. The second piece is competitiveness. And the competitive salesperson we find really wants to do two things. Number one, they want to be the best among their peers. They're always comparing their performance to their colleagues. They want to kind of see how they're doing relative to the team. But number two, they want to win that client or that customer over to their point of view. Because to them, psychologically, that sale is kind of like a contest of wills. And then the third piece is optimism. And that's the salesperson's sense of certainty that they will succeed, as well as their resilience to hang in there when they face the inevitable rejection that a salesperson just has to deal with. So we find it's those three characteristics all together: need for achievement, competitiveness, and optimism, that psychologically creates sort of the perfect storm, if you will. And collectively, we refer to those three characteristics, yes, as drive.
Well, that explains why I'm not in sales, because I am like the biggest curmudgeon ever. Optimism is so not one of my strong suits.
She's just joking.
I'm just
She's
kidding.
Very optimistic. But actually, that leads me to my next question. How can you apply the same assessment, or can you apply the same assessment to recruiters, which are very much salespeople?
Good question. Yes, we actually do have several companies who use the assessment for recruiters, because you're right. In many ways, the recruiting position is a sales position. To the extent that the person who's a recruiter needs to be a hunter, you can certainly use an assessment like this to determine, does the person have that drive? If drive is essential for that role, do they have those three non-teachable characteristics that are going to be important in that sales portion of their job, if you will? Sometimes companies will also ask us, what about a sales leader? Really, in terms of a leadership role, though, only to the extent that the person needs to be, say, a player coach is the assessment important. And then in that case, only to the extent to which they need to be a player. It doesn't tell us about their ability to be a coach, but if they do need to be a player, how effective will they be again in that sales portion of their role, if you will? So certainly you can use it for a variety of roles. Just important that the person is in some way a hunter, if you will. Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't want your sales manager to be competing with their people.
Correct. You always want to make sure that position is not designed such that they have they're going to be getting into too much of a competition with their colleagues. And that brings up a problem that many companies will often have, is promoting somebody who's been successful as a salesperson into a sales management role. Mm-hmm. Because of course, when a company does it, the challenge they often run into is, heretofore, this person who's been very successful has gotten results through their own efforts. But now, if they're being promoted into a management role, now they have to get results through others. That's a very different proposition that we're talking about. So oftentimes, again, things that lead someone to be very successful as a salesperson can kind of get in their way in that management role.
So what has happened, Dr. Croner, to me, and I know it's happened to thousands and thousands of other companies, is you have the infamous interview with a sales candidate, and they always come across very smooth and capable. What interview questions can you use to assess these three elements of drive?
Good question. Again, you always want to keep in mind the best predictor of future behavior is previous behavior. She mentioned the sales candidate coming across very effectively. Oftentimes the candidate, quite frankly, is doing a little bit of homework in terms of reading books on how to interview effectively. Many of those will tell them to, if at all possible, take over the interview. And so that's what will happen. The candidate will sit down, particularly if the interviewer is not prepared, and they will take over, ideally trying to sell themselves. And if they can filibuster, if you will, and run up the clock, oftentimes they'll extend their hand at the end and say, hey, do I get the job? And in that situation, of course, the interviewer has no idea whether the person is going to be a good match for the role. Instead, we always keep in mind that we want to control the interview. And in doing so, keep in mind the best predictor of future behavior is previous behavior. So we want to ask the candidate about behaviors they've engaged in at work in the past that reflect the characteristics that we would like for them to show for us going forward. So for example, when it comes to need for achievement, one of my favorite questions to ask is, tell me about what kinds of sacrifices have you had to make to be successful? What does that person consider to be a sacrifice? Was it maybe they had to work a couple weekends last year? Or was it something more substantial? Now compare that to the kinds of sacrifices you've seen your top performers have to make over time. Or tell me about the greatest goal you've ever accomplished professionally. Really have the person describe that to you and flesh it out. Then you can reflect back to them. You've got to be proud of that. How do you intend to top it? Again, the person high in need for achievement has a plan to top it, and they're excited about the opportunity to tell you about it. For competitiveness, tell me about the last time you were competitive at work. What did that look like for you? Again, we want to look for the person that just relishes competitions, where even if they're not in a formal competition, they want to make a competition with their peers because they just have to know how they stack up, if you will. And then for optimism, tell me about a time when you remained persistent, even though everyone else around you gave up. Now tell me about another time, just getting those consistent examples. So, and again, in our book, Never Hire a Bad Salesperson Again, we have all of our favorite questions. We also include an interview guide in there to kind of help companies walk through all of the questions, not only when it comes to drive, but also those other teachable skills, things like, you know, relationship skills and persuasion and organization, and a system they can use to score those types of questions as well.
I love this stuff because I can see how everything, those interview questions, those sample questions, I think help people who may be listening that don't, I don't want to say that don't understand, but need more information as to how this is valuable and why it's important. And seeing an assessment as separate from an interview is not really what we're doing here. We're kind of like integrating the two by saying, here's what you're looking for. Here are our call outs, and here is what we have discovered to be the best ways to vet out your talent. Like I just love the different directions that this can go in. Now, based on that information, sometimes we're at the mercy of what something is telling us on paper about a person before we even get to this point, because time is just as much of an investment to, you know, the candidate as it is to the organization looking for the candidate, right? So what about indicators on a resume that would show us that would lead us to those questions of drive in an interview?
That's a question we'll often get. Is there anything we can look at, say, in terms of a resume or a LinkedIn profile, for example, that might indicate a person's going to have high drive? And we have had several companies where almost every single person they put through the assessment score strong in drive. And so we've asked them, what do you look for, you know, in terms of a resume review? And they said, well, they tend to look for three different things. Number one, of course, they look for the passive candidates as opposed to the active candidates. And when I say passive candidate, I'm speaking, of course, of someone who's not necessarily actively out there looking for a position. Maybe they're currently employed now. The reason for that, of course, is because oftentimes if someone has been looking for a while in the world of sales, there could be a good reason for it. So they tend to prefer the passive candidates as opposed to the active candidates. Number two, they look for the person, of course, that's not a job hopper. So they have some longevity in the positions that they held. Number three, they look for the person that's able to provide some sort of metrics to show that they have been successful previously. They find those three things all together, although it's not a perfect correlation, they do tend to predict a higher overall drive score, if you will.
Do you think drive can be taught?
Past the age of 21, 22, there's not much we can do to change it. No, and that's really the challenge. Oftentimes I'll get that question after I'll give a speech. What about my kids? What leads somebody to having high drive? And it's really a combination of nature and nurture. The nature side, there is a psychological characteristic, a personality characteristic that psychologists call conscientiousness, a facet of which is achievements driving. Conscientiousness is something that people are relatively born with, if you will, at a certain level. But at the same time, there's the way the person is raised, the way that they are held accountable for their behavior, for example. So we find that people that end up with a high need for achievement tend to be the sorts of individuals that are kind of hardwired with that conscientiousness. At the same time, they're held accountable in some way for their behavior as they are growing up. So it could be they're held accountable for their performance in school, or they are held accountable for maybe something extracurricular, like performance in a band or athletic performance, or maybe just watching their siblings, if you will. Those two things, though, together, the nature side and the nurture side, by the time the person's in their kind of late teens, early 20s, if you will, that characteristic is relatively solidified. And that's the challenge, because although it is solidified, we find that that drive characteristic is the easiest thing, of course, for a candidate, the easiest characteristic for a candidate to fake in the interview, and the most difficult characteristic to accurately rate, because of course, candidates can be very skilled at presenting themselves well in the interview. Sometimes they're even using sales techniques on you in the interview. It can feel, particularly when you have a position that's been open for a while, and finally, you know, the cavalry's here. But then 6 months or a year down the road, unfortunately, that ends up being the best sale that you ever really see out of them. And you're left asking, wait a minute, where did that person who I interviewed, where did they go? Well, that's why, of course, we always advocate the use of the assessment prior to the one-on-one interviews, so that, again, our clients can identify the higher potential candidates and avoid spending too much more time with the individuals whom they might describe as the good actors or the professional interviewers. And then they take it to the next level with those questions that we talked about. So you're exactly right. It's about coming up with that, you know, that series of steps, step by step, to make sure that as we're hiring, resume review, then maybe a phone screen, then the assessment, then deciding who moves into the one-on-one interview, then using those behavioral questions. That's what I meant by putting a series of steps in place to make sure you are consistently hiring individuals that have those characteristics, consistently bringing them on board, and then consistently over time, raising your average, if you will, in terms of your performance.
Do you think the test results could change over time? So if you are testing a 21-year-old just out of college, and then you test the same person at 40, do you think that at that time, at 21, that they will have pretty much the same results as they would at 40?
You know, that's a very good question as well. A related one, an additional question we'll often get is, well, what about the person's mood? What if they're having a hard time at their job? Does that affect their scoring? And broadly, in terms of both of the questions, essentially, we're looking at traits as opposed to states. So because we're looking at traits, those are relatively solidified and relatively stable. So you're not going to see a giant drop or a giant change over time. As long as the person, again, we're assessing a salesperson, we're assessing them in that sales role, if you will, you're not going to see that those characteristics move that much between the time the person's 20 and 40. You may see a little bit, but it won't necessarily go from, say, a 5 on drive to a 1 on drive. You may see a point or two here or there. Oftentimes, sometimes, as you can imagine, if the person is later in their career, they may start focusing on giving back to others, if you will. So that can impact in some way, say, their need for achievement. So certainly there can be a little bit of change here and there, but you're not going to see a drastic personality transformation typically between the person being in, say, their 20s and their 40s. You'll see a little bit, but it won't be extreme, if you will.
If a salesperson candidate for a job interview can schmooze a job interview, is there a way, or have you guys made it so that it cannot be done, that a candidate can schmooze the assessment as well?
Thank you. Yeah, that's an important point. That's one of the challenges that an assessment will often face. You know, an assessment of a current salesperson or a current person doesn't necessarily have to be as strong on the faking side, because the stakes are not necessarily as high. But when you have that high stakes hiring situation, you really need to be careful to make sure that the assessment is going to be rigorous, if you will, and not prone to faking. So, for example, if the question says, "I consider myself persuasive," true or false? And the person wants this position and it's a sales position, they're probably going to say true. So we use a question format with the drive test that's, again, designed to eliminate faking. It's called forced choice. So for each question on the drive test, the person gets a series of three statements, all of which are worded very positively. So a question, for example, may say something like, "I consider myself a leader. I have great relationship skills. I'm very organized." Okay. Now, which of these is most like you? And which one is least like you? So obviously that then forces the candidate to make some very difficult distinctions. But then it gives us a much better sense of their real priorities. And as they're working their way through the assessment, of course, we're constantly monitoring their consistency as they respond to those questions. Because as you can imagine, if they do try to fake the test, it's going to be very difficult for them to remember consistently what they ranked most and least across the entire assessment. So again, it's designed to be very robust and resistant to faking in that regard.
Does that include duration of time taken to answer questions? Because I also think that maybe that could come into play where somebody's taking a little extra long to be careful about a question. And then the next time around, they've answered it so quickly that there's a gap in that regard too. Maybe I'm diving deep here, but I get,
that's okay.
You know,
okay,
I get my wheels turning. I'm thinking about the possibility of the schmoozers out there.
Sure. Even if the person takes a lot of time with the assessment, we find that, again, if they're trying to manipulate their responses with all three statements, that's why all three of those statements, we actually had a team of psychologists look at each statement in each question, each of the three, and make sure they were all equal on what psychologists call social desirability, to make it especially difficult or especially challenging on the candidate side. So again, the benefit to that is, even if the candidate's trying to take their time and game one particular question, by the time they come to the next question, they're going to see three more statements, all of which are going to sound very, very positive as well. So it's going to be very challenging for them to present themselves in a consistent way, in a positive way, such that they're going to be able to, again, consistently not only have a high drive score, but then get a consistency score that's strong. So that's why we always give a consistency rating at the bottom of the assessment. We want to make sure that the person is not doing that. So generally, again, it's all about how you introduce the assessment. Make sure that the assessment is introduced in a positive way to candidates, so that they know that, again, we're really just looking at their behavioral preferences at work. No right or wrong answers. Take your time, but don't spend too much time. Don't overthink the questions. Just move through at a reasonable clip. And generally, we find it takes about 20 minutes for a candidate to complete the assessment. So it's very candidate friendly in terms of timing in that regard.
What if you are looking for another salesperson for your team and you receive a application from somebody that has incredible experience? You perhaps might know some of the references, you call in the references, and they have a verifiable successful career. Then you give them the sales drive assessment and they score very low. What do you do?
Very good question. Yeah, the key distinction is, I want to know about the person's past and their performance in the past. The key distinction, even if the person has performed well in previous roles, my key question, of course, as a hiring manager is, are they going to continue to bring that same degree of success to bear for me? So the phenomenon that you bring up, the situation in which the person maybe has great references, they perform in a stellar way in the past, but for some reason, they're scoring lower than you expect when it comes to the overall drive score, you know, their drive score on the assessment. The most common reason Why that would occur, as you can probably imagine, is you may have an individual who heretofore has been successful, for example, at a very large company. So they've done quite well at that company. Maybe they even built up a book of business that they were focused a little bit more now on shepherding. And oftentimes the thing that makes that person attractive as a candidate is, wow, they've had success at this very large company. They've got this great contact list through doing so. Surely they've had world-class sales training. Surely they will bring that same degree of success to bear for us. But then the key question is, what really led to their success? Was it all purely their own effort? Or was it really the fact that in some situations, it was that brand recognition and collateral material that were consistently closing the or opening the doors for them, if you will? Oftentimes, again, we want to find the individual who maybe has had a previous track record at a company of a different size, or they haven't necessarily relied on, say, a book of business that they're focused on shepherding. But when you do have that phenomenon, the person having a successful history and then scoring lower on the assessment, that's generally what you find is oftentimes they come from, say, a very large company, as you can imagine, where they have a great degree of brand recognition that helps them out. They may have built up a book of business, or they may have a lot of connections that are helping them out. They may have built up a great network that helps them. So those tend to be the types of things that cause someone to have been heretofore successful, where now the person's applying for this role where maybe they don't necessarily have all those advantages and they're taking an assessment and they're scoring lower on drive. That's generally what that leads to. But again, even in that situation, I never say that any assessment is the be all end all. I would simply say if you had said to me in reviewing the assessment report, you know, we love this candidate. They've had this great track record of success. All the references say they're fantastic, but they're scoring lower than we expect on the assessment. What should we do? I would never say you should throw the candidate out. I would simply say, well, look at the assessment as a bit like having, say, your consumer report before you make a major buying decision. Just sort of says, hey, buyer beware. Just make sure you're covering any areas that are being flagged here in the assessment when it comes to the three elements of drive, as well as, of course, all of the other core skills that we measure, confidence, persuasion, relationship, and organization, just to make sure that you are comfortable moving the person into that role for you. Again, of course, that makes you much more powerful now, as you can imagine, as an interviewer, because now you're not necessarily relying on all the hype that you've seen in the past. Now you're uncovering dynamics instead going on underneath the surface that you might not otherwise have seen at all before. And no matter what, you're going into that new hire with your eyes wide open.
How do you bring in IQ to this equation? Because I know we are using your sales drive assessment test, and we find those very valuable. We also have used Wunderlich for a long time, which is now called OneScore. And we have found a strong correlation on someone who might not score that well on the IQ portion and how well they do here. I mean, obviously, we've had people that have scored extremely high, have been extremely intelligent, and they have not done well. But we typically haven't seen it the other way around when somebody scores very low in that area, that they've done very well here. And I think, you know, we are, our business is not very cookie cutter, and there's a lot of things for a sales representative to learn. And sometimes we feel that they could have too long of a learning curve. So what do you think about that?
Of course. So looking at the predictors of success, really in a variety of industries, as the research indicates, there's achievement striving, and then there's cognitive ability. You know, those two tend to be two of the biggest, if not the biggest, indicators just broadly. Now, in using our assessment, the drive test, of course, the drive test doesn't have any cognitive element to it in terms of an intelligence test, but combining it with a Wunderlich, particularly, for example, if you're looking at a sale that needs to be a little bit more complex, where it involves, say, problem solving, analytical ability, conceptual skill, then yes, of course, combining an assessment of personality, particularly drive, if the person needs to be a hunter, along with an intellectual assessment to determine, does the person kind of have that horsepower, if you will, to kind of indicate that they're going to be successful in that role, that could certainly be a very kind of powerful combination, if you will. Again, if they do need to be an effective problem solver, so certainly kind of combining those two. Now, of course, in some situations, the person can be a little bit more cookie cutter. Maybe there are some scenarios where they're not selling something as complex, where it's a more simple sale. In those cases, you don't necessarily need to use a cognitive assessment. But if you are selling a more complex solution sale, the more complex it is, certainly the more helpful that an intellectual assessment can be to determine whether the person, particularly if they don't have experience in that particular role, how fast will they be able to kind of pick up on that, if you will. So certainly those can be a very effective combination.
First of all, congratulations on the second edition of your book, Never Hire a Bad Salesperson Again. This one, selecting candidates who are absolutely driven to succeed. So as we're wrapping up here, we'd love if you could tell us a little bit more about the second edition of your book. And I know you mentioned it earlier, the release date, but all of those juicy details, please, Dr. Croner.
Yes, it'll be in early December. The book will be coming out. In terms of the second edition of the book, we wanted to really, since the first edition came out in 2006, we've learned so much in terms of our practice, again, dealing with what 1,200 companies around the world, wanted to share the best of what we know, not only just in terms of beefing up in terms of the interview set section, talking about what you look for in a candidate, talking about our research, detailing that and adding to that research that's been done since then in terms of the three elements of drive, and then talking about the consistent process companies can use, not only how to select an assessment, but then the interview process. What do you do on the interview side? What questions do you ask? And that's why now we have a downloadable interview guide with all of our favorite questions. We went through a few before, but all of our favorite questions when it comes to the three elements of drive, all of the other core skills that we look at with the assessment as well, a scoring system you can use for that behavioral interview. And then as well, techniques for bringing the person on board. How do you onboard somebody who's high drive? What do you do in terms of establishing what we call a mission meeting? How do you meet with them and really kind of bond in terms of your goals for the company as well as the person's own personal hopes and dreams, and show them how those two align and do everything that you can to make sure there's strong alignment between two and keep that alignment alive over time, if you will. So that's what the book is all about. How do you identify candidates who have those characteristics? How do you onboard them? And then how do you do that consistently over time? Everything that we have learned in terms of our research from 2006 to the present, if you will. And we're excited for that to come out in the next couple of months.
Well, I can't wait to read it. I know, I was just going to say, we'll definitely be picking up our copy. So thank you so much, Dr. Croner. This has been a wonderful discussion and episode. As I said earlier, we love the psychology piece of these assessments and finding the right fit and talent for organizations. So I think it's been a lot of useful information for our listeners out there. Thank you.
It was a true pleasure.
Thank you for the opportunity to be of service. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
For more information on today's podcast guests and how they can help your organization, please visit www.thetrainingassociates.com.
Bring Out the Talent is a Mudhouse Media production.